Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 702. And in this podcast, we're going to talk about the three big stories that the Parkland, Florida shooting completely obscured in the last few days and last couple of weeks. And they are significant if you believe that there is something called self-reliance in the United States. We'll talk about it in podcast 702. So my understanding is by the time you hear this podcast, if you're listening in the Twin Cities, we are probably going to be in one of those winter mix, you know, kind of snowstorms where we have sleet and we have rain and we have snow and cold weather again. And it's been like this all winter where it warms up. It was 45 today in podcast time, and then suddenly it goes back down below zero. This is really taxing your water heater and your heat. And when it comes to keeping these systems working properly, whether it's business or home, you need help when you have a problem. And that, of course, is Ryan Plumbing and Heating. You want reliable service? They do it. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in Frogtown. Here's what they do. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. I've told you about them for years. They're great. Residential and business. And of course, if you are a journeyman plumber and you got, sort of locked out from projects downtown because of the Super Bowl, or you're just looking for work, Ryan, of course, is turning away work because they're so busy. Give him a call, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan customers get first dibs on service. So get in there. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Now, I also want to thank people for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts. Right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, we have streaming, and it sounds great. You actually, if you just hit the page, depending on the browser, you just will start hearing the last three podcasts, and you should click play. If you don't hear anything, click on play. You can hear the stream, but you can also hear the podcasts at Stitcher.com if you have an Android device. Tune in. iTunes, of course, a lot of Apple iOS in my analytics, a lot of iPad players, things of that nature. And you can also get the podcasts at blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Google Play as well. Appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting on Facebook and Twitter and my favorite Instagram. And I also appreciate donations to thebobdavispodcast.com at that little yellow donate button. Just click on that thing and you can donate whatever you want to mobile podcast command. Okay, so again, thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts in all the different many ways that people do listen to the podcasts. Well, I think in this podcast, I want to do kind of an easy talker or gonzo talk podcast where I kind of talk without notes. It's hard for me to do these because I have so much going on in my head that I tend to wander, and I don't like the way I sound when I wander, and I don't like the way I talk when I wander. But I think it's good every now and then to kind of ventilate just overall thinking. And what has triggered this podcast is the stories that were obscured, with all due respect to the victims and the people in Florida, the stories that were obscured by the school shooting in, I think it's Parkland, Florida, right? That everyone's talking about and posting about, and everyone's putting memes up and, you know, throwing stuff on Facebook one way or the other. And it's depressing. It makes me feel dirty and gross to talk about it. And it's one of the reasons that I do not like engaging in the day-to-day political stuff, because I don't enjoy the hustings, so to speak, but because I don't feel that it ever results in any productive movement forward one way or the other. It doesn't matter what you believe in. there's a predictable outrage, and then everyone gets upset, and everyone yells and screams and pounds and blames each other and blames the government and demands that something be done, whatever it is. It doesn't necessarily have to be a shooting. Everyone gets all upset, screams and yells, and they call the local talk station, and there's protests and blah, 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 and then nothing happens because we are not in control of our legislatures, and we are not in control of our government. It is answering to its own gods and proceeding down a path of its own choice, and it has nothing to do with anybody out here in the United States one way or the other. We like to think that we are self-reliant in this country and that we have a birthright to democratic political institutions. And that's just absolute nonsense. It's Pollyanna. There's no reason to assume that a tendency toward democratic and political institutions is in the genes of anyone and passed on by birthright to anyone. Liberty is something that has to be fostered, and thinking is something that has to be fostered. So there are three news stories which were obscured by this event in Florida, and I don't know what would have happened in terms of talking about them other than probably nothing. But the first one is the indictment of some 13 Russians and I don't know how many Americans, four or five Americans, on a very real attempt, apparently, to influence thinking and to disrupt the American political process in 2016 and to negatively affect the faith of Americans in their political institutions. And Mueller, this is the special prosecutor, he's going to be indicting these Russians, and this is offered up as proof that the Russians intervened in the U.S. election process. And I saw an article which set me off, and that's why I wanted to talk about this. The article said that the Russians bent the internet to their will. And, you know, the story says, to its credit, it cites Facebook and it cites YouTube. And of course, whenever anything is negative about YouTube, they mention that Google owns it. The Google owned YouTube. And then I think it mentions Twitter as the internet. And I immediately bristled because the truth of the matter is the internet is a big, amazing thing, which includes a lot more than those three essentially websites. YouTube is a website. Facebook is a website. And Twitter is a website where people go to do things, whether it's, notify their family that they're going to be on vacation or to post pictures, put up news stories, to promote events or to promote businesses or to grind political acts or to put up a video, as in the case of YouTube, although you can put video on Instagram and Facebook and so forth. That is not the internet. Those are offerings on the internet, just like CNN.com or the Bob Davis Podcasts.com. There's a lot more to the internet than that. There's all sorts of research information available from universities. There's all kinds of discourse and websites where people discourse on all kinds of different topics and all kinds of information available on the internet in general. It isn't just those three sites. And if you get your information from Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, then I feel sorry for you. I've said this before, because you're completely ignorant of anything, because, you know, virtually everything on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter is designed to persuade. It is not designed to inform. Yes, there's some breaking news applications and efficacies to Twitter, maybe, and maybe to Facebook when there's a crisis and we don't get information in any other way. Maybe there is some value from a news perspective, from a newsroom perspective, to what people on Facebook are saying at a specific moment in time. But for consumers, there is virtually no value to Facebook. It's like eating McDonald's food and not having – it's like Soylent Green. It's not nutritious. It just fills you up. It does nothing for you. Same with Twitter. Same with YouTube. Yes, there are pictures and there are videos of Tucker Carlson and God knows who else on YouTube that are supposedly information-oriented. And yes, there is information on YouTube. But you have to utilize other tools on the internet and not on the internet to know the facts about something. Now, I don't mean the facts about conspiracy. I don't mean the fact that the Illuminati are trying to take over the world or have already taken over the world or whatever you want to say. I don't mean the fact that Elon Musk's Tesla Roadster is not floating in space or that the moon landing was faked or any of those nonsensical things. I'm talking about what we know about a particular topic at any given time. And self-reliance begins with what you know and knowing what you don't know and being willing to say, here are the facts I have and this is all I know about X, whatever X is, fill in the blank. And what we have in this country is we have a lot of people who don't understand that there's a thing called a library, that in lieu of the internet, you can actually go to the library and you can pull down Jane's military and look up all kinds of information on aircraft, or you can pull down geographical maps and look at information about very detailed information about nations and people and all kinds of things. You can get the CIA World Factbook and have it sent to your house from Amazon, and you can sit there and you can read about every single country in detail if you want. There's plenty of information available. If you don't like the CIA World Factbook, you can pull all kinds of facts from source documents about any country and anything in the world by simply going to the library. And if you live near a major university, usually you can just go in and use the university library, which in many cases are really well stocked with all kinds of information if you so desire. If you read newspapers and enough newspapers, and if you guys want to send me an email, I'll explain how to do this to you. You can know more within a week than any of your friends will know about anything in terms of detail, and you will know pretty much what we know and what we don't know, so that you will not be swayed by the sea of advocacy journalism and commentary in all media today, where people are paid to write things to convince schlubs like you and me to believe A, B, or C. So that's the first story that really upset me. Did the Russians try to influence people's thinking? Well, you know what? If you got your news from Facebook and YouTube and you're dumb enough to believe that that's news, then I say you get what you deserve, whatever it is. If it's Hillary, then you deserve it. If it's Trump, you deserve it. You know, if it's the end of the world, you deserve it. If you're that stupid that you get your information from those sources, because they're terrible information sources in general, with the caveats I've given you earlier about Twitter and the news uses, newsroom uses of Twitter and Facebook. That's the first story. The second story that was obscured was the fact that the president had a meeting with Democratic legislators. And in this meeting, he said he would advocate and would be willing to support a 25-cent gas tax on diesel and gasoline in order to get his infrastructure bill passed. This is amazing to me, and I'm going to start by simply just saying that one of the things that I hear a lot today that I'm amused by is business people will say, well, you know, the economy's really going and it's going to grow great next year. We're going to do great. And I say, why do you say that? And they say, because everybody I know says it's going to. Why do they say that? Because everybody they know says it's going to, and that means something. But why? What are the actual economic reasons why you say that? Don't have any. At best, they'll offer up the tax bill, and they will say, and I've also said that a reduction of corporate taxes from 35% to 21% is good for people who have more money. There are some positive things in the tax bill, but most people right now are excited about the tax bill because they're seeing more money in their paycheck. And if they're smart, they'll say, well, I'm seeing more money in my check. And if everybody else is, then they're going to go out and they're going to spend that money on stuff. And we're going to buy more stuff and it's going to get better. And that's how it works, right? Most of these people are conservatives who are supposed to believe in supply-side economics. What I'm describing to you is a Keynesian concept that if the government spends money, in other words, gives you money or spends money, that will stimulate growth because people will consume. It will stimulate consumption. Classic economists don't believe that there is a consumption side. They believe that there is only the supply side. We are not practicing supply-side economics, but that's another podcast. This is what people will say. Well, here's an interesting fact, and I think it's very amusing. Okay, so you're getting a certain amount more in your paycheck. Let's say it's $200 or $300 a month, maybe. That is because they reduced the pass-through and people are now getting more money in their paycheck and they're happier because they have more money. And let's say you have a small business and you're seeing more money because of the tax bill and you're pretty excited about it and you're pretty optimistic about it. And then they go and they pass a 25-cent increase in the federal gas tax, which will take the price of now. Price of gasoline was $2. Saw it at the, on the way home tonight from yoga. It's like $2.75. That would mean that gas was $3. And when it went up above that, it'd be $3.10 or whatever. So gas here would be $3 a gallon. Diesel would probably be almost $4 a gallon, depending on where you are. So if you are a landscaper, let's say, and you have 52 trucks, and that's a pretty big business, and you got to fill those trucks up every now and then. And so each of, you know, you got three or four F-450s, and you got a couple of 650s, and they cost anywhere from $150 to $300 to fill up. And you got to keep them filled so that people can go where they need to go. And now suddenly you're going to pay 25 cents more per gallon of gas. Forget the average consumer who's going to be driving to and from work across the metropolitan area, and they're going to pay 25 cents a gallon. Well, there goes your tax cut. There goes the money that was put into your paycheck by quote-unquote reducing the pass-through. There goes all the benefits of the tax bill right out the window so that the Republican president can promote his infrastructure program, which is supposed to be building roads and bridges. And I would just say this. There's plenty of money in the federal tax coffers from the federal tax, that federal gas tax. So there's plenty of money in the federal highway funds, Federal Transportation Authority highway funds from the gas tax. If we don't spend money on light rail and if we don't spend money on subsidizing development and handing out grants to developers, and yes, they do federal transit authority grants to Met Council and to in this state and to developers along the light rail lines and developing streetcars and everything else. Yes, federal transportation authority funds go into that. So what is obscured by the lurid stories that are emotional in nature is an attempt by a Republican president to basically rob you blind so he can be a great builder of things and put his name on things and build roads and bridges and a new airports and all this other nonsense that we don't need. I'm going to say it because it's true. I have been in almost every major city and driven on almost every major road in the United States in the last 4 or 5 years. And I'm going to tell you, we don't need new infrastructure. We just spent $1 trillion on infrastructure starting in 2008, and states struggled to spend all that money. They repaved and resurfaced and built new latrines at National Guard camps and everything else. We didn't need to spend that much money, and we don't need to have an increase in the gas tax to have another infrastructure package for a Keynesian president with an R by his name. And it's infuriating. And what's really infuriating is I had conversations with people and I told them that Trump was advocating for this increase in gas taxes, and they were like shocked. What? That's crazy. That can't be true. Oh, yeah, it's true. That was the second big story. And finally, the other big story is the fact that the Republican Congress passed an increase in spending, a large increase in spending, and Trump's budget is $4 trillion. This is on top of – it's increasing federal debt on top of $13 trillion in federal debt, which is close to more than 100% of our GDP. It's at dangerous levels, and I think it's actually $13 trillion. It's more like $20 trillion. It's not even close to $13 trillion in terms of the national debt. That's the actual $13 trillion is actually the individual debt, the bank debt of Americans. Americans are actually carrying $13 trillion worth of debt in this country. I don't have a perspective on that number, so I don't know if it's a lot, but I do know that most people are living paycheck to paycheck despite the optimistic predictions about how the economy is going to do and have been for quite some time. So here again comes this self-reliance issue. What's irritating about the budget and the spending is this is the Republican Party doing this. This is the party that's supposed to be supply side economy oriented. They're supposed to be promoting classical economics. They're supposed to have a conservative president. And when you say conservative is supposed to mean they're not going to spend more money. In our state, conservatives have increased the state budget consistently. In the federal legislature, Republicans have consistently increased the federal budget. So what happened to the Republicans constantly complaining about spending? They get into power and they spend more. And there's two issues, actually three issues here. One is the self-reliance issue, which I'll get to. The second one is this issue of lack of principles in what is called the conservative party, erroneously. And the third one is what do we do about it? So I'll just we'll start with the principles issue. I think it's important for the Republican Party to have fiscal principles, and they need to reduce spending, and they need to reduce the amount of government that we are dealing with. It's expensive, it's demanding, it's an affront to our freedoms, and it's dangerous in the long run. And it's important if you're a Democrat and you're listening, you're probably disagreeing with that, and that's fine. It's important that we have a strong conservative party to balance out the other side. It's also important that we have a strong so-called liberal party to balance out the other side, because we don't want only one group of people to run the country, because what happens is they run amok. In any case, the Republicans are not conservatives. What we have is two different sides of the same coin, so to speak. We have, a coin with a red side, and we have a coin with a blue side, and both sides do the same thing. One does the same thing to a slightly greater extent than the other, but both sides do the same thing. One side calls itself conservative, the other side calls itself liberal. Both of them are spending us into the poorhouse and robbing Americans blind. Why do I say robbing us blind? Because all spending eventually results in a tax, and all debt results in a tax, either in the form of inflation or in the form of higher taxes to pay off the debt. So either way, we are being taxed, and our taxes are going to go up. When you have the Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, talking about weaker dollar, that means inflation. It is an erroneous idea that a weaker dollar means that people will buy American goods. They're going to buy American goods because American goods are the goods to buy, okay? They're not going to buy American goods because we have a cheaper dollar. But when he says that, that means what he's advocating for is more inflation, and that's going to cost you and me more. That costs the schlubs more. So if we're out here and we're the lower and upper middle class and the middle class, we are going to spend more if they make the weaker dollar. We are not going to benefit from that. And these are all things they're talking about while you're posting on Facebook about the school shooting. See what I'm saying? So there's that issue of these people are not conservatives and they lack principle. And I've talked about it on other podcasts. I've linked that podcast about principles so many times, I really shouldn't link it again, but I will. It's the chief problem in Republican circles, aside from the fact that people don't participate. Gee, maybe there's a reason for it. And aside from the fact that it's old guys that sit on chairs and look like sacks of potatoes, gee, maybe it's because there's no principles in the party and that there's no young people or women really in the party to speak of, in terms of comparative numbers to other political parties, because, gee, maybe there's no principles in the Republican Party. And aside from Russian propaganda, Americans don't trust the Republicans for the same reason, and it's because of the lack of principle. So then we get to this issue of self-reliance. So if you don't learn to teach yourself how to determine the facts about a particular news story, then you're poorly informed. You can't be self-reliant because you're poorly informed. If you support parties that spend more money to take more money out of your paycheck, to take your money away and to take your liberties away, you can't be self-reliant, okay? And finally, this question of principles is highly important. And again, if you can't have a self-reliant population, then you can't have a political participation level that's going to produce an opposition party, or it's going to produce, a majority party in any given cycle that has any principles. So we don't know what we're getting when we vote this or we vote that. And more importantly, without grassroots support and without grassroots development, we don't get principles in either party. And so we aren't creating new political parties, and we aren't creating new constituencies within political parties to move political parties forward. And so we don't have any of that. So self-reliance becomes extremely important. And when you rely on these really poor information sources, you are You will never become self-reliant, no matter how much powdered potatoes you have in the basement in preparation for the inevitable, you know, kill shot from the sun or, you know, the book from Ed Dames that tells you what to do or anything else that you've listened to on YouTube in the last 5 years of that's nonsense. You're not prepared because you're not prepared to be self-reliant because you don't your brain has been twisted by propaganda and nonsense. So you can't be self-reliant without, you know, a clear head. You know, that's the first thing. The second thing is you can't be self-reliant when you support political parties because you're on Team Red or you're on Team Blue, whatever happens. You have to be on the team. You can't be self-reliant and be a bobo for the Republicans or the Democrats. You have to be able to do your own thinking, and you have to be able to organize grassroots support for ideas separate from the social media and the internet and electronic media. You have to be able to talk to your neighbors, and they have to be able to know you, and you have to be able to build organizations without the support and help of the so-called electronic or digital media. Digital media helps, and I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying most people you know, that I know in politics don't have a clue about how to organize without those tools. And so finally, what do we do is really, really an important issue. And I'm just going to tell a quick story. You know, in this state, we have caucuses. And when I, you know, for most of the people that are listening that don't live in Minnesota, when I say caucuses, they think of, you know, sort of those rough-hewn Midwesterners in Iowa who become very famous with their caucus every 4 years because they vote on presidential candidates. And it gets national coverage, these caucuses. And it's this idea that this is this real grassroots democratic process. And in Iowa, generally it is. The caucus system is alive and well in Iowa. Not so in Minnesota. We've had caucuses. There are several caucus states. Minnesota is one of them. And, you know, the idea is we also are these rough-hewn Minnesotans who are independent thinkers, and we get together and we discuss issues and we vote and we have these caucuses. Well, the caucus system in the state of Minnesota is being eroded by the powers that be in the state, which is the seven rich guys in suburban Minneapolis and St. Paul who have lots and lots of money and control the political process. And they don't like the caucuses because they do not like the grassroots. And they got rid of a good part of the caucuses, but we had caucuses to select statewide candidates just recently. And on the Republican side, the turnout was deplorable, literally. It's just terrible. In fact, most of the people that I knew that were convening caucuses had to convene several different precincts together enough to get a consensus or whatever you call it, a quorum, to actually have a caucus. So the caucus system in Minnesota is based on the basic political unit, which is the Senate district. You have an A side and a B side. Those are the representatives that come from each side, and then you have a Senate district, and that's what they base it on. And there's something like 110 Senate districts in the state and somewhat the same number of basic political units. Most of these basic political units on the Republican side are very sparsely attended. Most of the time, the officers in these basic political units have been doing it for years and years and years. They have meetings. Nobody shows up. So the caucuses are a big deal because this is where you get the basic political unit officers. And this is where the grassroots is supposed to come from. So when you go out and you organize for the caucuses, you put your people into the BPOUs, and then you can build a grassroots candidate from the BPOUs. So this year, the caucus system produced a gubernatorial candidate in the form of former Hennepin County Commissioner Jeff Johnson, who's now the endorsed. He'll get the endorsement at the state convention, but he won the caucuses. He won the caucus vote to be the governor. And amidst this, it was just announced that former Governor Tim Pawlenty, who is a moderate Republican. Jeff's a moderate Republican too, by the way. None of these guys are Ron Paul Republicans. None of these guys are libertarians. None of these guys are anything other than, you know, Democrats who are against abortion. That's basically a Minnesota Republican. They're Democrats who are against abortion. You know, that's the idea. I'm sorry, but, you know, there are very few other things. There are very few other things things that separate Democrats from Republicans, but that's pretty much it. They're religious and they don't believe in abortion, so that makes them Republicans, because they would be Democrats that were, you know, strong Second Amendment supporters, as they are up in the northern part of the state. And that's a conservative Democrat in this state, right? And I'm sorry to be cynical about it, but that's how I feel about it. And all the Republicans are up in arms because Tim Pawlenty may be throwing his hat into the ring to run for governor. So he would be running to get the endorsement at the state convention, and I'm sure will come with lots and lots of money and lots and lots of support from the seven rich guys in Minnetonka, because he's the guy with the banking connections, right? And he's the guy who can win. And you're already hearing people at local level saying things like, well, he's the guy that can win, you know, and that's the guy we got to support because we're Team Red. This is what I mean by a lack of self-reliance. So when you hear people, and you're going to hear it, they lament the fact that Tim Pawlenty is going to be the candidate for governor, and he will be. If he decides to run, he's going to be the guy, because all the rich guys are going to back him. And I'm sorry, Jeff, but that's the way it is, unless there's a miracle that happens. But if there's no grassroots support for libertarian ideas, there's no grassroots support for this kind of a development on the Republican side, there is no fiscal responsibility in Washington, because the Republican Party that is now in control in the House and Senate can't control the purse strings. The president doesn't care. He just wants to build airports and say that he did something. They're not conservatives, despite what they say. They use the term. It is a misnomer. It doesn't describe today's Republican Party any more than liberal describes the Democratic Party, you know. And, you know, we're kind of at the end of an age in politics in the United States, and the new age in American politics hasn't kicked in yet. So this question of self-reliance is really important, because, you know, if people aren't willing to go out and develop movements that support liberty by themselves, without the support of social media, without Facebook and without Twitter, but by the skin on their knuckles and by their willingness to work with their neighbors and their willingness to reason with each other and their willingness to build step by step by step, one at a time, we are not going to have any kind of libertarian movement or liberty movement, for lack of a better term, in this country. We are not going to have any kind of fiscal responsibility in this country. What we're going to have is a bunch of people in the United States who just want something from the government, whether they want the government to get rid of this or to allow that, or whether they want the government to give them more money, whether they want a basic American, what do they call it, a universal income, or whether they want more bread or whatever it is that they desire to get from the government. It doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. Everybody wants to go to government to get it. And so the Republican candidates say, well, you know, you don't understand what this is a tough thing. This is going to take us a number of years to do this, that, and the other thing. We got to reduce this. We got to increase that. We're going to have to pass this. We're going to have to pass that. And you get the same damn soup every time that there is. So I'm frustrated because I don't think Americans are self-reliant. I think we spend a lot of time on the radio advocating. I think we spend a lot of time interviewing people who are the latest it child that's going to come to the university and upset all the students at the university, so we can point to the University of Minnesota and say it's a, you know, left-wing agency. Don't send your kid there. You know, you don't want to live in Minnesota. You don't like Minnesota politics. Move to another state, you know, if you don't like it. Or send your kid to a college. There's plenty of them that don't necessarily engage in it. And I know people are guffawing, but there's Tufts, there's Johns Hopkins, there's Stanford. There are other schools that are a little bit more academically challenging than some of these schools where, you know, this stuff is going on. But see, what happens is we're celebrating these quote-unquote culture warriors. You know, we're celebrating, well, she really gave it to them that day, and she really showed them. And you know what? She accomplished virtually nothing. These people are accomplishing nothing. And they're accomplishing nothing because it's all on social media. It's all on, and that can be blunted by spending a couple of $100,000 in a concentrated way with 15 or 20 internet trolls to, you know, be 60 or 70 different people each to try to influence people to think one way or the other, and it works. And it's been working for years, and people have been doing it for years. So, you know, just because Joe Schmo goes out and writes a book and pisses off a bunch of college students means virtually nothing. The organic work that needs to be done And by the way, you know, people on the left are doing that organic work. They're meeting people and getting phone numbers, and they're having meetings, and they're having teach-ins, and they're doing things where they're teaching people and building organizations and webs step by step, personally, one-to-one with human beings, as opposed to using social media. There's no substitute for sitting down and working with people. You know, I just recently joined a business organization. I'm not going to say which one because it doesn't matter. But one of the things I've really felt is very strongly that I don't care what political agency these people come from. I'm interested in hearing about their business and their lives and figuring out how to help them so they can help me. And that's the kind of work that you have to do. Not all this braying and shouting and screaming and pounding. So that's what I wanted to say in this podcast, and I've said it. So there. Don't forget, if you need emergency service, Ryan Plumbing and Heating can take care of it. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in Frogtown. Again, reliable service, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. As I always say, there's a reason we call plumbers, because they get it done and they get it done right. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. You know, I didn't talk about it in this podcast, but this is another thing that has nothing to do with quote-unquote conservative politics, and that is trade protection. And Donald Trump is a trade protectionist. He's more like Lyndon Johnson. He's more like a standard Democrat in the sense that he believes that we need to throw up barriers to trade to protect American companies. The problem with that is if you manufacture overseas, and there are some great reasons to manufacture overseas, cost is one of the big ones, and you're getting pushed by this administration and by Congress to pass laws which are trade protection, well, you have to plan ahead for that, and that means reshoring. If you're thinking about doing that, then you want to think about Depot Star, American design, engineering, and manufacturing right here in Minnesota. There are also reasons to manufacture in the U.S. One of them is Depot Star. They do great work. American design, engineering, and manufacturing. Visit them online at depotstar.com, D-E-P-O-T, depotstar.com. Well, anyway, I appreciate you guys listening to my rant. It's just, you know, there's so many things going on that obscure what is important that I every now and then I gotta hose it down. So thanks for listening to Podcast 702, the Bob Davis Podcasts.
In the sweat.